Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What up, what up, what up? Hey, everybody, it's Michael Steele. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. It is a treat to have you all hanging with the dude as you sit around the fireplace with a hot toddy listening to the melodic tones. Yeah, no, that's not what you're doing. You're probably screaming at your kids right now. It's been 5 weeks, folks. We're on lockdown. Get used to it. No, but I'm so glad everybody could take a moment and spend some time with us. There's been a lot happening in the news, and I happened to stumble upon a little gem that I think you're actually going to get a kick out of. Now, you know, we've had a couple of conversations with candidates running for office, for example, a number of the presidential candidates who are running on the Republican side. That didn't turn out too well, so I hope this doesn't... doesn't mean anything. But anyway, a friend of mine sent me a video clip of a gentleman who was on MSNBC last week. And I sat there and went, wow, this guy's solid. He's a Democrat running in a red state for the United States Congress. I got to buy this guy a drink. And he's on the podcast today. He's Tom Winter. He serves in the Montana House of Representatives, representing the 96th legislative district. He's a Democrat, as I said, and there are a couple of good ones out there. You know, it's a small number. You know, it's like black Republicans. There's just a few of us. But Tom is a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives, and there's only one congressional district in Montana, so that's not going to be a complicated race for him. But I'm really excited to have him on, because what really struck me in his conversation on MSNBC was his outlook of the current situation with coronavirus. Also, the fact that he kind of gets the whole rural healthcare, you know, sort of out on the periphery of the overall healthcare discussion, and he wants to put it where it rightly belongs, in the middle of that discussion. We've had this conversation on our program, folks, as you know, with respect to black healthcare, and you know, there's very little difference. There's very little difference. So we're going to get into all of that. Tom, welcome to the podcast, brother. It's good to have you.
You as well. Thank you so much for having me. I have to say, I'm a bit nervous talking to the RNC chair here, so we'll see.
No, well, you saw what they tried to do to me, so it's all good. I'm a pussycat. So let's before we get into the substance of policy and all that grind, let's find out a little bit about Tom now. So just so you know, folks, the brother's in a log cabin. I mean, so this is Abraham Lincoln, right, in the making. Now, it's not real a log cabin, but it's a cabin that you bought. You're out. I call him Mountain Man. I mean, he's just doing it. He put the electricity in just a few weeks ago and got cable hooked up. So you're halfway there.
Yeah, that's true. This is I had to just beg and plead with my local internet provider to string a wire to this place so I could get this data link. So if it falls apart, you can blame the local telco. It's not me. Like, a bear probably ate it. Who knows? It's always happening. So you were asking about my history, I guess.
Yeah, tell us
about
your story. Yeah. I mean, you're in the state legislature now, and you're making a run for Congress, but a little bit about your background.
Well, obviously, I'm a terrible handyman, and we'll see how this goes, because we're relying on the electricity now. But so I'm 33 years old. I'm a state legislator. I represent a district that was Republican previously. I know, you know, my life is partly political now, so the mix together, I'm going to have to go there. But so I grew up in the Midwest, moved here when I was 20, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I've been here for, I spent my adult life here. My entire family actually followed me afterwards. So I never expected, readers and listeners, you might try and avoid your great Midwestern family by moving out to the mountains in a small town, but eventually you will just run into your mom at the grocery store in that same town, because that's what happens now. Before coronavirus, my whole family moved here as well. So my sister, her boyfriend, my mother, her boyfriend, we're now like a third of the town, it feels. So I'm never too far away from family. But I like it that way.
Good.
And I just have, it's a great privilege to be able to live in one of the most beautiful and I would say community minded places in America. And every day, all of us, I know very few Montanans listen to this podcast, so you know I'm not trying to get votes here. Right. Really, very, very few people have the privilege of being able to be here. And it is just even and especially now when I think our community bonds are being tested, we here are showing what we're about, and that's community. And that's also, I mean, the ability, you know, you're social distancing in the East Coast. I got 2 million acres of wilderness behind my place, and you know that's federally owned. I can go there anytime. So we distance ourselves anyway, and right. So the way that we're responding is just different. And it's we have different challenges, which we'll talk about. But there's also not opportunity, but there's a way that a lot of us are reconnecting with what it means to really be a part of this place. So
have you always been sort of that outdoor guy who just gravitated to the mountains, or was that something that just kind of you have to develop that? I mean, because it's a big leap to really go in such a isolated place. I mean, your nearest mm-hmm. neighbor's got to be several miles away, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. I grew up in Kansas City, and I love where I'm from, but I wouldn't run away from home because I would tell my parents after I left. But once I got a driver's license, in Kansas, I would just drive.
You were like me. Yeah. I'm leaving, Mom. Goodbye. I'll be down at the neighbor's house.
I'd be gone. Like I drove like 17 hours to New Mexico. Like I wanted to be in the woods. I wanted to be in wilderness. I love the mountains. I like fishing, hiking. I just wanted to be out in it. And you just don't have that in other parts of the country. And this is a different place. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I have to give a hats off to you. I'm a city boy. I grew up in Washington, D.C. You know, I was freaking out the first time I ever heard crickets, because we don't have crickets in the city. And so I can only imagine when you've got 2 million acres of wilderness behind you, there are a whole lot of sounds that you have to get used to at night.
It's just beautiful. It's great. But also, you know, I got to say, I miss, and again, this is all pre-pandemic, but don't think I don't miss like Thai restaurants or like the ability to get, you know, there's only one bar. I mean, this is... There's not much. Where are you going tonight is not a question we ask. It's just whether or not you are.
Right, so, it's whether or not you are, and just how many of the neighbors are actually going to be there. So
exactly.
So on that point, because that really kind of gets into the difference in the social distancing aspect of what we see on the West Coast and the East Coast, and what we see in places like the middle of the country, and certainly in our more rural areas, where that social distancing is actually kind of part of the game. I mean, you, like I said, your neighbors are miles away, and you know, you congregate in town occasionally, but it's not this constant barrage of people that you're around. For us, it's a big deal. I mean, people are going through all kinds of withdrawal. You know, it's like, what, you mean I actually have to spend time in the house with the kids and the husband, and what the hell? And how has that been? Does that help explain why some of the more Western governors or Midwestern governors have, you know, been less inclined to sort of create, you know, the total lockdown of their state, and have kept some form of the economy open, if you will, versus what we see elsewhere?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think, let me go with the first part, which is the question about the governors and how they're handling it in the West. So first off, Steve Bullock is our governor, everyone. Mm-hmm. He's running for Senate. I can attest, at least personally, to him being one of the more thoughtful, caring people I know in politics, and I look up to him. So vote for him. But he's our governor now. He actually has instituted and has been at the forefront of actually instituting a lot of the forward-thinking social distancing policies we've seen on the coasts. And that has kept we have moved our peak or our surge later because of that. So I know you're saying like it must be easier to social distance here. That's very true. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, our government, I would say that we are going to be running into an issue in the next couple weeks and months where the states around us, Idaho, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, they're not doing the same policies that we're doing. And we are going to pay for that as Montanans because they will come over the border. And they are going to have more rapid spread than other places. I mean, obviously, there's an economic cost. It's just, I mean, it's devastating. But I don't, I just don't believe that you can cut our society into economy versus health of the population. And that'll get into what we're talking about with PPE later. But it's not a, I find sometimes the argument about, you know, you're hurting the economy. How are you going to do this so you lessen the hurt to the economy? And we just, you know, baseline, we got to keep our voters and our constituents alive.
Right.
And that's with good policy. So social distancing has been something we do here anyway. But also, you know, we got five towns spread out about second or third. I can't remember. We always feel like the biggest state in the union, especially I drove 6 hours yesterday. My district, by the way, so it's the whole state. That's 14 hours across. And I'll talk to people, you know, there's not one Democrat that has an at-large seat. So I'll talk to other people that kind of connect me with who are already serving in Congress. And they're like, you know, just go down to the mall and get some votes. I'm like, there are four malls. They're separated by mountain passes. They're 3 hours apart. Some of them are closed. Anyway, right. So it's just tough. But the way that I think we're handling the social distancing is going to be an interesting model moving forward because we still have to go to the grocery store. And many of us live in small towns where actually, since there's, like I said, there's only one, you know, might be one or two bars in a small town.
Right.
Well, there's also only one grocery store. And if everyone needs something, you're going to have to go there. We can't grow our own food in a place where it's cold 9 months out of the year all the time.
Right.
So there is self-reliance that is a big part of our culture. But there's a reliance on others that I think leads to a certain type of politics that, I mean, I hope it's what got me elected, but it's also, it makes us uniquely vulnerable. Because we don't have the resources of larger states, but we still have some of the clustering of people.
How has the so you've taken on the opportunity to run for the United States Congress? How has the coronavirus space and environment changed your approach to the campaign, and certainly even changed your responsibilities as a legislator? Having to deal with it immediately and make big policy decisions along with the governor. Obviously, the chief executive is going to control a lot of that, but the legislature still may play a role here and there. And how else does that translate into your run for Congress?
We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know how, but everyone is working overtime in the bureaucracy of the state of Montana and I think the state legislators to just move things so that we can keep chugging along as much as we can. But I did not expect that. So that's changed my state legislator role. It changes the way I view government, truthfully. It's been a big wake-up call.
Oh, I can imagine. Oh, I can imagine on a number of levels how that has played out. And the challenge, obviously, in this environment is trying to meet those needs, get government to work. But then you've got this federal piece that plays a role. How?
Yes, you do.
What do you think you get out of going to Congress right now?
It's not what I get. I think it's what Montanans get, and we are somewhat unique in having an at-large. We're not unique. We're unusual in having an at-large district. So you're one of 435 people if you're in Congress. I am very aware that there is very little power in a congressperson's space. What there is in the state, in our state, is the ability to set the tone for our politics and the statewide conversation, because there's just the amount of pride we feel as being Montanans is difficult to describe.
Right.
People just love this place. I know DC actually as well is a place where I've been, and there is such a feeling of, for people who live there and don't work in the big white marble buildings, and I've gotten to know some of them, meeting you, there is such a love of that place and a pride in what they've built there. And in an understanding of the challenges that are there and how they have a specific thing, obviously, they're fighting for in the federal government. But we can speak with one voice. And so what I view is an ability to kind of, I think, for one, be a voice for all of Montana federally in the national level, but also influence what we talk about in the state. So it's helpful for everybody. And then also in my party, on the Democratic side, like I said, there is not we don't have an at-large district. We don't hold one, which is a failure on the part of my party. And if we don't do that, and if we're not able to speak to people in Montana, we're Democrats aren't going to be able to hold durable majorities in Congress. Because this is a state that's purple, I guess you could say, with a Democratic governor. We should be, my district is the same as the governor's, and the same as Senator Testers, who's a Democrat, and the same as Senator Daines, who's a Republican. I really want to be able to articulate a rural Western way forward for our national politics on the Democratic side. Because I think our national politics, regardless of party, really, really aches for that. And I, the people here really need it too.
How partisan are the politics in Montana? I mean, it's you know, I can speak to Maryland, obviously. We're outnumbered 2-1 by Democrats. I grew up in D.C. We're outnumbered 10-1 there. That was fun. but in Montana, it's a different ball game because, as you said, the whole state is the play. I mean, it's not a corner of the state where you're from or a particular backyard. So how does that work?
Well, so 45% of Montanans are independents. I'd say 100% of Montanans want to call themselves independents.
Yeah.
There's just a distrust of institutions out here. And remember, and also, more than half the population wasn't born here, which is something that Montanans don't like to acknowledge. I wasn't born here, like I say. It's something that I was worried would really hurt my race. But it turns out no one running is from here. And it's many people have come here, many Americans have come here looking to build something because they saw what Montanans had built previously who were born here, and they want to be a part of that project and that story. And that story really doesn't involve the federal government. It doesn't really involve parties. And that speaks, I think, to the strong pride people feel as Montanans, not as Republicans or Democrats. There is an old-fashioned dislike of party labels that I find really, really invigorating out here. It just makes for a much more thoughtful politics and also more idiosyncratic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get a Democratic senator and a Republican one. President Trump won the state plus 22 points and Steve Bullock won plus 6 or 7 on the same ballot. I mean, ticket splitting is something you talk about after you vote with pride. That's what you go talk about afterwards. Right. How did you split your ticket? And you were thought of as a thoughtful, sincere person who cares about the public good by doing that.
What is your take then when you look at where we are right now on the state of the federal government's response to the COVID-19 situation versus what you've seen the governor and other elected officials in the state of Montana, how they've responded?
You know, I deeply want to ask you this too. I don't know if we're allowed to go back and forth.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, I guess, and actually after this, I'd love to see what you're seeing where you are. So in our case, like I said, there's distrust of institutions, but we deeply need them as well. And, you know, the governor, I think, has really shown leadership and stepped into a leadership vacuum at the federal level. I mean, the idea that, you know, when our president says on a phone call to our actual governor, he asked a question, you know, we don't have PPE. Mm-hmm. What can we do? How do we get it? I'm being outbid by California. Because they have 33 times the people and 60 times the purchasing power of a small, rural, not very wealthy state like mine. And the response was, I didn't know there were shortages of PPE. That's just not true, for one.
Right.
So the federal government, and especially the executive, is not being an honest broker with states that are in dire need. And we just cannot, I can tell you right now, Montana cannot compete on the open market for ventilators, for N95 masks, face shields with California. That's not that we don't like California. It's that the open market does not work. There must be a resource allocator at the federal level to ensure specifically that places who have always been forgotten, like Montana, aren't forgotten. Because we're just as American as anyone else, and we're going to lose people, and no one's even going to notice. We're not going to get news stories about what's happening at the 2-bed hospital in Granite County. I think it's 2 beds. It's, you know, that's not, we don't even have the news organization's capacity, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I deeply trust and like the people who are involved in journalism in our state, but it's a tough place to cover. They're not going to be able to raise their voice above the national cacophony of what's occurring everywhere. And I'm deeply concerned that what will happen is we will be forgotten. And our surge will come. And we will not have enough ventilators or PPE, And we'll lose people who we otherwise could have saved. And not only that, but you were talking about what's happened in the African-American community with COVID. Specifically, this will impact Native communities in ways that we don't necessarily understand and will not be reported on. They'll just lose elders, and it will just be a fact. And I will not know about it in Missoula. You certainly won't know about it in D.C., and that community will just struggle on. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the idea that we'll have grief and loss unremarked upon in the national level will really, I don't want it to embitter our politics here the way it might. And that really concerns me.
That's a powerful statement, and there's a lot of truth to the disconnect between the federal component, the state component, but most importantly, that local component where everybody talks about, oh, yeah, we know you're there, but really they don't. And so they're, because their actions don't act like they know you're there. You know, if you really need the PPEs, then you get the PPEs. I mean, it's not complicated. I mean, I look at the fact that after all this time, knowing what we know and watching the progression of this disease, or this virus rather, only 2 million Americans have been tested. How does that, I don't understand how that, you know, how that works out when you're looking at, you know, looking at the whole scale of things, you get a group of people over here, a group of people over there. But, you know, when you're looking at these states like mine where, you know, 6-7 million people, and really you're only talking maybe 2% of the population, rather, you know, has been tested, that's a problem. And so if that's a problem for places like Maryland and Mississippi, Montana, which has fewer people, is vastly more rural. Where do they fit in this pipeline, and how do they get the kind of attention and service that they need to protect their people, and particularly their indigenous people who have a history that goes back before the founding of the country?
Yeah, and I find that, and I think it's just that it's communities of color are always going to be shortchanged in a healthcare setting. Yeah. We see that all the time. You just see that with maternal mortality on reservation communities right now, or Native communities. You know, you see that with African-American communities. It's just across the board, the country is not tilted to help people of color. I speak about this, by the way, not as a spokesman for the Native community. I am a white guy from the state of Montana. My name is Tom Winter. I have to be an ally in this case. And I really view that as part of my job here during the pandemic. My campaign needs to use, we are privileged to have a megaphone that might be able to rise above the din of what's occurring and the daily catastrophe of the pandemic. But if we can make sure that we get, not only, so our campaign donated PPEs to rural hospitals and reservation clinics, but also that I'm using my voice to ensure that they're not forgotten is really important. We need to hold people to account. And that's truly, like, I mean, I wanted to be on your program anyway, because it's exciting. Uh-huh. And you're fascinating. But like, and it's a privilege. But also, I want to come out of this. I want to press end on this Skype call. And I want to know that I got the word out that, you know, we have reservation communities that have gone through centuries of institutionalized racism. And that's just true. Mm-hmm. It's not political. And that what that's going to do is they're going to pay for it now, too. And they're going to lose people they didn't have to lose. And none of us are going to notice outside of it. And that is going to be, that will be on us as a country and as Montanans. And I just don't have space for that in my moral universe right now. It's not acceptable to me. So we got to get the word out. So that's partly why I'm talking to you.
We're having a conversation with state rep and congressional candidate Tom Winter. We're going to take a quick break so the sponsors can share a little bit of love with everybody. And we'll be back with more conversation with Tom right after this.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
We're back with Tom Winter, state rep for the great state of Montana, representing the only congressional district in the state. There he is. You got that Montana power. And also a candidate for the United States Congress. What do you think of the president's threat to adjourn the Congress if so he can put in place appointees that have not been appointed? Largely, we're talking about judges, but apparently, I guess there are some administrative appointees that he wants. But he's thinking he has the power to adjourn the Congress, which technically he does, but it has never happened in the history of the country.
I want to throw this back at you, but if that's fair, but I have to say that we're talking about Americans dying on a scale we haven't seen since World War II. We are talking about fundamental breakdowns in our healthcare system across the country and in my state in particular. And the president wants to, I guess, garner headlines by threatening the nuclear option with the Congress. It is just, I mean, it says everything that Senator McConnell said that was dead in the water immediately. I can't tell at this point whether the point of some of these press briefings and the point of him making these pronouncements like that mutiny on the bounty thing. By the way, that doesn't turn out well for Captain Bly.
No, it doesn't. No. I think he needs to go rewatch the movie.
Look, I got to tell you, like, I was remembering, like, I'm pretty sure I bought the Cliffs Notes in high school for that. So I only know the broadest outlines, but it did not work out. So how much is this just trying to garner headlines and to break through? I think that's what it is. He's running a misguided media strategy as the country burns. And I don't have much patience for it. I wonder what it feels like for you, though, in a place that's much more connected. You yourself are more connected. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with your assessment. And I think the president, basically right now, what I've assessed in watching the last 2.5 weeks of this is, you know, with the very first one, and I watched how the president performed, because that's what it was.
Yes.
I said, this is nothing more than a coronavirus press rally, because this was his escape hatch. He couldn't have the massive 25,000 people, you know, cheering him on and screaming and yelling, where he could go vilify his enemies, perceived and real, and he could stand there and get patted on the back, you know, rhetorically by everyone in the room. So he has these conferences, and he uses them as a way to pick fights with the press, which he does at every one, and, you know, and to stake his claim and push back against the Congress. And yesterday, the last two have been particularly vitriolic in his attempts to excoriate the, you know, Nancy Pelosi or to go after a member of the press. And it's feeding the base. But what I think is happening in translation is that the base is now also becoming overwhelmed by coronavirus. So they are in search of reliable information because grandma now is sick, mm-hmm. or Uncle Bob isn't feeling well, or I can't go see, you know, this person that I used to care for because, you know, we're in isolation. And I think that as it's been reflected in some of the recent polling, is starting to wear on people. So every episode of these rallies is another way for the president to kind of, you know, throw his manhood around, not recognizing that no one gives a damn, because to your point, people are sick and dying. And so our expectation is our president will lead in these moments, not show his personal parts and not prove that, you know, he's the greatest. He's done the greatest. No one has ever done anything like this before. We are the best. We're number one. And I loved it when he said, yeah, we're number one in the world with testing. That's probably true, but not on a per capita basis. We're not. because our populations are bigger than those European countries. So, yes, we may have done more tests, but on a per capita basis, there are a whole lot of Americans that don't even know what a test looks like.
That's out here. Very true. Well, I can tell you as well. I mean, I myself, as an American, not as a congressional candidate, I just ache for leadership right now.
Right.
I want to see it. I mean, it's why I think we're seeing so many governors of both parties really coming to the fore right now. And I know that's, you know, Cuomo especially, I believe that's, he's doing a great job. And also that's a function of many of the major media companies being in New York and affected by it.
Right.
He's doing it. But there's many people who are forgotten, like our governor here, who's doing an amazing job. The state is rallying around him because people want leadership. And that's not a political statement. I think that's just human nature. I also, though, you know, you were saying that many of the president's core supporters are you know, starting to feel, trying to feel it, especially more now, the pain.
Right.
And I would say that I don't know their political play or their political stance, but our campaign, you know, donated a couple thousand KN95 masks because we found out that there weren't enough. And it was, I mean, I was a former EMT, so I know that you can walk up onto a scene, you don't know what you're going to encounter. It could be a COVID patient. And once we did that, and we were also helping other organizations get connected to the distributor, because it's been very hard to find distributors that will ship. And so we were, you know, putting that in our card and just doing unusual things we probably shouldn't do as a campaign with our own campaign funds.
Right.
But it matters because we need to get the PPE out there. So I'm delivering it because it goes faster to drive out there like yesterday. I mean, the word got out that we were doing this, and I got dozens of calls. At first, it was to, you know, reservation clinics or health centers and rural hospitals, but also like a coroner's office, because they're going into scenes where there's, you know, human body fluids everywhere, and they're unable to protect themselves.
Right.
I had a sheriff's wife message me at the middle of the night, and she was concerned because her husband is going out in a rural county to possibly do retrievals or work with members of the public who are possibly COVID positive. And she didn't want him coming home and infecting her family because he didn't have proper PPE. We can't have breakdowns,
right,
not only at the federal level with the president, you know, talking about mutiny on the bounty and, you know, trying, you know, basically stomping all over the Congress, which I obviously care about as someone who's running for it. But also, we can't have that breakdown. And then also, like, we can't have sheriffs unable to go to work because they're worried about infecting their kids. And you got to forestall that somehow.
I think an important word relative to the healthcare system, and that's breakdown. How do you go about preventing a future breakdown of this system, knowing what we know now, but more importantly, knowing what we knew then? We've had, what, two or three presidents speak openly about America's capacity and its capability to handle a virus like this. George Bush talked about it. Barack Obama talked about it. And yet here we are 20 some years later, having to confront the very thing that we were told could happen. And we seem wholly ill-equipped to handle it. The president fires in and shuts down the office that deals with pandemics and you know, these type of situations, because Obama, you know, fully staffed it and funded it. So, well, we don't need that. That was his thing. Let's get rid of that. But now here we are. So how do you, as you're thinking, you're looking to be in the Congress this time next year, this Yes. issue will still be on the table, I believe, this time next year. Why? Because a vaccine is not going to be available for 12 to 16 months from now. So what do you see as a new voice in the United States Congress that needs to grab people's attention about the healthcare system and how we prepare better in the future?
Well, I think it's interesting you're asking that in the context of the pandemic. I was talking about healthcare reform, and the reason I got involved in public service was because of that in the beginning, because we had Medicaid expansion, and my opponent in the primary or in the general wanted to get rid of it, and that would have been 50,000 people. And I didn't think that was right. I would say, though, that, you know, beyond the pandemic, human frailty is going to be with us forever. And that frailty, physical frailty, and, you know, illness and bad health and age, those affect people differently based on where they are, the color of their skin, and their income. And that should not be the case in America. We are the richest country on earth. We have the ability to take care of everybody. And we are getting, in our pandemic response, the exact thing that we paid for, which is not very much. And I out in rural areas, specifically, like I say, I went to a critical access hospital in a town of 900 people. And I opened the door to the ER, which is just a door because the emergency rooms are mostly kind of packaged to take other places. Right. Most of the, by the way, there's no level one trauma center between Minneapolis and Seattle. So if you fall and really hurt yourself here, if you get in a car accident, that normally you go down the street where you are right now, we get life flighted to Utah or to Washington State.
Wow.
So that changes the whole healthcare system. But that should not be the case. And also what shouldn't be the case is I'm opening the door at an ER during the pandemic and the nurse is wearing a portion of a diaper on her face because it's the only way to protect herself and her community has no PPE whatsoever. And I was astonished to see that in America. And that is what we're doing to our frontline workers, many of whom, by the way, I don't know their political views, but you know, it goes without saying, at least 50% of them are probably Trump supporters.
Right.
You're saying how that's affecting them now? The deep moral, I mean, I was stunned. You know, a person putting her life on the line for her community opens the door wearing a portion of a diaper on her face, and she has to act like it's okay. And we had a conversation and joked and laughed, and I handed her PPE. But I should not be in the, I'm a congressional candidate. I should not be in the business of fixing this fundamental failure, at least in terms of handing the PPE right. to people. My job should be on the policy right. side. But she should not be in the business of being demeaned by having to wear a portion of a diaper.
So
on
what
her
would
face.
You do? What would you do from the policy side, though? What
and you have to?
Yeah, Congressman Winter, what do you propose?
Look, I propose centering people who, like you were saying at the beginning, are right now on the periphery of our healthcare questions. It matters what happens. Everyone is equal, but it matters deeply what happens in places that are marginal to begin with, like Montana. If we are not taking care of people here, it means we're not able to take care of people in downtown DC. It means we're not able to take care of people in Alabama. It means we're not able to take care of people in First Nations communities in Alaska. It is a question, you know, we are as good as the weakest link in our healthcare chain. And we're seeing that with the pandemic because it is truly a chain of, you know, you can get it through a chain of being of infection. Mm-hmm. And we have a weak link. And if that link centers oftentimes on communities that are poor or of color or just rural like mine, we are all susceptible to the same thing. And I hope that what I want to do, like I was saying, is one in the Democratic Party, because I'm sensitive to the fact that, you know, I'm thankful that you're having me on as a Republican as well. I care about having both parties be one viable and thoughtful and caring about their communities, but also both of them being able to speak equally and compete in states like Montana, in rural places that usually people think, oh, it's definitely Republican. We are going to the Democrats are going to fail at whatever they attempt to do in healthcare reform if they don't have a voice for places like here. And I don't mean they wouldn't be able to get it passed. Maybe they could get something passed, but they'll fail in terms of they won't help my community because the voice for the rural people will not be there. So they will be forgotten again. And I just want to be, it's not a post-partisan, it's not beyond partisan, it's just like partisanship is over somewhere, and we're in video, somewhere to the left or right of me, it doesn't matter where it is. I'm concerned about what happens to working, struggling families in rural areas, and neither party seems to have answers for them. And I want to be, especially in the healthcare space, I want to ensure that they have healthcare.
Tom Winter, amazing. Man, this has been a great conversation. I'm impressed. I have to tell you, if I were full-throated in the business, working with candidates again and all of that, you know, you would be one of those candidates I would say, brother, you just named the race. I'm there. Let's do this. It's been a real privilege listening to you, and I hope people walk away from this conversation not just impressed by what you said, but moved by the fact that there were words from a person who is leading from a space that a lot of people forget about, thinking about people a lot of people forget about, and wanting to bring that, as you said, from the periphery to the center. And that's what this, if nothing else, COVID-19 for me reminds us of our humanity, or at least it should. And we don't see a lot of that from a lot of elected officials anymore. And I think that's even been true in this crisis. But when you do hear it and when you do see it, you got to recognize it and you got to applaud it and you got to push it out there, which is why I had you on the podcast, my friend.
Anyway, I really, really, it's an honor to even speak with you. It's still intimidating. And you're welcome to come out fishing in Montana when this is all over.
Dude, little fly fishing?
Oh, yeah. We're going in the Stillwater.
I love fishing. I do. When I was lieutenant governor, I used to love it when I could go out on the bay and I would just take the case and you go and you're there on the water and it's
you're in salt water. Yeah, that's a lot.
I know, man. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful
for a different time.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a lot to work on.
We do. And I wish you well in the campaign ahead. We'll definitely be tracking you, and maybe even when we get closer to the fall, we'll get you back on, get an update, see how things heading out your way, and let's stay in touch, man. I really appreciate you having time to come on.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much. And everybody, please think of people in Montana and just think of the people in your community that need assistance right now and do what you can.
So. Absolutely. Take those words to heart, folks. Well, that does it for this episode. We're so glad you could be with us. Don't forget to do that download thing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. You know how much I like that part of it. So you guys take care. Be safe. Social distance. All right. Just take a yardstick with you. Keep it going. You know, keep it stretching out there. But be safe. Be good. Catch y'all next time.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.